At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE. Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit TRE.radio.
Well, morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've had what we call in the sports world a turbulent weekend.
A turbulent weekend. And in what way has it been turbulent?
Well, we started off with the Manchester United match, which I wasn't expecting to win at all. And United won, and then we had the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, and then we had the NFL. So, you know, some stuff has went good, some stuff has went really bad, and, well, you know, lots of highs and lows.
Well, all I'm saying is that if you support a team with the Rams in there, you're not had a great weekend. We lost 1-0 to Preston at home, Derby County Rams, and then my LA Rams lost as well. We'll get onto that maybe in a moment. Onward and upward, here we go. That's we got a saying in Derby, there's always next season. That's our saying. Let's start off with some football then, mate. Man United getting a great win there.
Yeah, it's a big morale boost for definitely the entire camp there, and they were, I wouldn't say lucky, but definitely fortunate that Sanchez went off in the first 5 minutes, and Chelsea had to put in their backup keeper who had really good performances last season in the Conference League, but it definitely aided Man United with all that chaos. I wouldn't say it was a massive performance, you know, shift. Like, it wasn't like we saw something that we haven't already seen against, say, like Arsenal or Brentford. You know, it wasn't such a thing. It was more the elements of the match aided Manchester United in the final score. It's a big boost, and I suppose a lot of fans are excited now because we've played Arsenal, we've played Manchester City, we've played Chelsea, who you could, you know, argue are all up there for a title challenge, and we've come away from those matches plus Brentford plus Fulham with 7 points. So I think a lot of people are ignoring the fact that, you know, we're still mid-table, and like, hey, we've played some really good teams and we've come away with 7 points.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of issues. You're getting excited about being mid-table, mate.
Yeah, that's my issue, because it's not a massive performance shift, and there's still a lot of issues. Yeah. I don't think sacking Amorim is the solution at all, and at least not mid-season, but definitely there needs to be internal questions on the
of the players. There's some fans that were saying that, and this is, I don't think true fans ever say this, but some fans have said this, that they would have preferred that Chelsea would have beaten United, and that they would have getting a new manager by now, or next couple of games maybe. Kind of makes the extended stay maybe for Amorim. I never kind of get that mentality. If you're a fan, you want your team to win.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I think that would be like, it would be everything that Man United have been doing. You know, if we go back to like the Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, there's a lot of years there that I think Man United fans forget quite quickly about how volatile that environment was. That, oh hey, we have an expectation, you don't meet it, you know, you could be fired halfway through a season, and that's not how you grow a club.
Even under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they finished second, you know, and you know they won the cup, didn't they, with Mourinho? So you know, you could argue actually it was not as good as Fergie's day, and that was kind of like this frustration for the fans there. We're not where Fergie's time was, but also they've drifted even further away from that. But anyway, let's not take away from the fact they had a great win at the weekend.
Yeah, no, it does a lot to that, and the Brentford game does a lot to give them confidence going into the season, especially after the international break where they kind of went into it very, you know, gloomy. This is a big win for them, and I think it takes what could have been a really bad weekend into a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. What else caught your fancy over the weekend?
Definitely the Arsenal and Manchester City game. This was, you know, I think you had to almost see it to understand the madness that was it. We saw, you know, a Man City squad that kind of came out the gates really fast, Haaland doing what Haaland does and scoring early. And we saw Manchester City side that had a lot of defensive discipline. But Arsenal sort of sort of dug in and got a result either way, and especially when Arteta brought on Eze, who set up Martinelli for I think it was a 93rd minute goal. But I suppose the interesting part about this is that Manchester City only had 32% of possession, so it looked like a completely different side than we've seen in like the past 5 or 6 years from Man City, and they also looked very vulnerable to the counter attacks and that late game pressure that Arsenal brought. I don't think either side can be completely happy with this result, but you know, it keeps Arsenal in contention at least for maybe an early next year title run, and I guess City keep a bit of dignity with a draw. But I don't think either side can be entirely happy with how this match played out.
No, okay, that's the thing. It's very, I think was it Pep Guardiola said, you know, it works most of the time, but it didn't work that day. So there we are. Right then, any other Premier League match you want to pick up on before we move on?
Probably the last one I'd have to talk about is the Newcastle match against Bournemouth. Bournemouth are currently, I think, unbeaten almost. Oh no, they are, but they put in a really impressive shift against Newcastle, who've had 3 goalless away draws, if I'm counting that correctly. So it's definitely a Newcastle side whose attack is suffering from depth and a little bit of creativity, especially away. So they've made it hard on themselves at the start of the campaign. But Bournemouth, I was really impressed with them. Of course, it is a nil-all draw at the end of the day. Yeah. But they seem to have what they sold 4 or 5 key players in the transfer window and really kind of picking up from where they were last season. And I've been really impressed with their matches and how they've bounced back against tough,
absolutely,
not just tough performances, but tough cultural moments like that match against Liverpool. I think that's a squad that has a really good mentality and can do pretty well this season.
A squad that isn't doing so well. Well, we touched on Villa; they got the first goal, but it still wasn't pretty performance. And 10-man Sunderland getting a draw against them. But just quickly before we move on to La Liga, what about West Ham United? Will they be getting a new manager? What about Nunez from Nottingham Forest, former manager, of course, Wolves former manager? Could he be in the mix for West Ham United?
Yeah, I mean, that's I think he would, and you know, you can never go wrong with Nuno. He's proven himself again and again, abroad and in the Premier League, which is a rarity when you have a manager who's left on like a great record in the Premier League. Like he was doing good in Wolves. He had them in contention for a lot of years, and when he left that Nottingham Forest side, he left them as European contenders. So that's always a possibility. I guess the question has to be where West Ham are internally, and that's been question of them all season, as if the people in charge of that, you know, the board of directors and the management above, do they have a vision? And the current census is that they don't. They're still sort of riding off that mentality that Moyes had, which was a very high ceiling but a very low floor. And I don't know. I think yes. I don't think Graham Potter was the right choice, and especially after his Chelsea departure. But
great at Brighton, but Chelsea not so well, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be working at West Ham.
I think Brighton had a great infrastructure, you know, even before Potter came in, and especially afterwards, and West Ham, there wouldn't be a club that I could consider to have that same infrastructure, even though they have all this decades of experience in the Premier
Heritage,
League.
Yeah,
you can't compare how they're operated to how Brighton are,
okay, Mark.
Just on a business stand.
What La Liga saying about Premier League at the moment?
Yeah, the La Liga president, who Javier Tebas, who's never wanted to be quiet, but he criticised the Premier League as being destructive, his words, due to high spending and deficits, and he was sort of comparing how La Liga is run and how it has sort of more controlled financial models. And I don't think Barcelona fans are going to be praising La Liga's financial models, but that's what Javier Tebas was saying this weekend. And And in a lot of regards, because I'm a huge American football fan, I'd have to agree. I like how they have like a salary cap over there, even in the MLS. I think it constantly brings a much more competitive side to any league, where like a team can really only be dominant for maybe half a decade if they're really good at what they do. But that's what he's had to say about the Premier League, and I suppose it works for them because they have a model that's extremely revenue driven. So and I mean, there's more news in Barcelona's and side of things as well. I think they've had a 112 million reduction in their squad cost limits for 25-26. So It's a struggle for them.
Okay, let's talk about Formula One then before we run out of time, mate. It's been an interesting one as well there.
Yeah, I unfortunately missed the qualifying on Saturday, and when I went to check my phone for updates, I was absolutely perplexed because I saw Verstappen on pole, I saw Sainz behind him, and then I saw Liam Lawson in third, and Hamilton in 12th, and Albon in 20th. I was asking myself, what went wrong here? And there were 6 red flags in total in that qualifying, which I think is the most I've ever seen in my time watching Formula One. I'd have to say it's almost a record as well in their books. But it's a thrilling qualifying that saw Piastri crash, which is something that we just haven't seen since Australia almost. And Williams got nearly on pole there, but a lap from Max Verstappen was the thing that unsettled it. And I mean, we constantly ask, you know, why is he the reference? Why is he considered the best? And Azerbaijan was a perfect example of that, where the rain was sort of coming in, you know, loads of drivers were slipping and sort of there's these unsteady conditions where drivers are trying to push but the cars couldn't find the grip, and then Max Verstappen out of nowhere pulls this lap when everyone else is struggling. He is able to come through, and I mean, that's why he is the reference for how good a driver is. As for the race, I mean, it was fairly smooth sailing for Red Bull as Tsunoda got P6, which, you know, 8 points would be fairly important, his plea to keep that Red Bull seat next year. And Max Verstappen led from the start to finish with a dominant performance. I suppose the interesting part of the weekend came more from Racing Bulls, Ferrari, and Williams, where Sainz took home a P3, which was Williams' first podium since 2017, I believe, in a race format, which was just an insane win for them. You know, Vowels has been doing a lot of work. Williams have new owners. They brought in new drivers over the last 4 years. So this is really just a testimony to the great work that's been happening behind the scenes for them. Racing Bulls were able to convert their place into P5 for Lawson and 10th for Hajar, which was really important for them. And there's a bit of sad news for Ferrari, unfortunately. 8 and 9th, and there's a bit of controversy because Leclerc and Hamilton swapped halfway through, and they were meant to swap back in the end of the race, and they didn't. But Internally, they're meant to be fair. Hamilton apologized, and it was a race weekend to forget for them. But overall, I think that was probably one of the better race weekends we've seen. And the question in everyone's mind now is Verstappen's 2 wins from the last 2 races. Is a possible late title challenge on the line? It's 69 points to Piastri. So I think the only way Verstappen wins is that if Norris beats out Piastri for the rest of the year and Verstappen wins every race, which is it's not very likely, but it does make the title race more interesting. Of course, the last 2 races have been, you know, tracks that favor the Red Bull's car of low downforce. But if we see a possible shift in the Red Bull, and if they've got this car that lays on that nice edge, if they figure out a way to make it more performance based and easier to get to that point, I think we might see a resurgence from Red Bull at the end of the season.
I think it's made it more interesting this year, though. All that's going on, I do, you know, we sometimes complain about it being dominated by one particular team or one particular driver, but I do think it's made it a bit more interesting. We're going to have to move on quickly. Let's maybe do 2 minutes on the NFL. Big day yesterday, and my LA Rams were winning. Philadelphia Eagles, of course, great team, and what happened, and maybe a couple of highlights from other matches.
Yeah, I thought that was a fascinating match because, you know, Eagles, we've talked about them all season. They're Super Bowl champions. They've got a lot of expectations on them, but they haven't went into matches completely dominating. I mean, Jalen Hurts, their quarterback, didn't even get 100 yards last week in throwing. So they're not a team that has looked completely dominant. But the important thing about winners, especially in the NFL, is every season it changes, you know, due to salary cap, players have be cut or traded or whatever you have you, but it's about being able to find a way to win, and that's what this Eagles team constantly does. It wasn't a dominant win. It wasn't something that we think, you know, is of the expectation of Super Bowl champions, but they found a way, and that Rams offense was firing. I saw a catch that Devontae Adams brought in, and I was, you know, absolutely thrilled. Of course, my eyes were glued to the Green Bay Packers and Cleveland Browns game, which was, you know, that was just a really sad game for me because, you know, the Browns didn't score until 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, but somehow they came away with the win against Super Bowl contenders Green Bay. But overall, we can't really say whether a team is playoff ready or is a bust until maybe week 8 or week 9. We're still only 3 weeks into the season, but I would consider the Rams division to be one that is ripe for the picking. The 49ers are injury laden. The Seahawks are still getting adjusted to you know, their new coaching system and a new quarterback in Sam Darnold, and the Arizona Cardinals are, well, they're the Arizona Cardinals. They've been in limbo for the last 20 years. So I think, you know, the Rams have just as good a chance to come away as maybe wild cards in the playoffs than any other team in that division.
Absolutely. Okay, Mark, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but it's been a great weekend of sport, and we've not had a chance to cover everything that's happened over the weekend. But Mark, as always, thank you very much. And you can listen to this again on our social medias, on Talk Radio Europe, on Instagram, and also on Facebook.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.